Hi, friend. It's Brittany Moses.
And Ranella Kalagithi.
And you're listening to Speaking Our Minds, the podcast that brings you honest and nuanced conversations around mental health, holistic wellness, and the real complexities of what it means to be human in the challenges of today's world, where we have fun, fascinating, and meaningful discussions around how to live a more insightful, connected, and whole life from the inside out, joined by guest professionals, thought leaders, and some of my friends and those with lived experience. As always, we ask that you keep in mind that the views and opinions shared here are respectively held by each individual and is not a substitute for professional care or an alternative to seeking personal help from your clinician or provider and is ours to discern. We're so glad you're here. Follow the conversation on Instagram at SpeakingOurMindsPod and sit with us because we're diving in. This podcast episode is brought to you by WeShare by UHSM, a unique healthcare membership on a mission to create holistic wellness for the mind, body, and spirit. I'm honored to partner with UHSM and its community of faithful members. Together, we plan to create more awareness and programs around mental health and the role it plays in our overall balanced health. If you or someone you know is frustrated with their current healthcare, I encourage you to inquire about membership options at www.weshare.org or call 1-800-900-8476. Hi, guys. Welcome back to the Speaking Our Minds podcast. We are so glad that you're deciding to spend your time here with us today as we are talking about being a culturally competent human. That's loaded.
It is.
What do you think of when you hear being a culturally competent human?
The one word that comes to my mind is just awareness.
Oh, I like it.
Awareness of where you come from. Awareness of your influences, awareness of the people around you.
And where they come from.
Awareness of your biases against certain people. It's being culturally competent starts with awareness.
Yeah.
Really, and this is why you're here, is to become, hopefully, a little bit more aware of what is out there.
It's a really big part of training in counseling and therapy. Is the cultural competence. It's actually ethical. Like, it's a form of ethics that you need to be culturally competent. You need to be able to take into consideration the background of where your client comes from, of where people come from. When you are considering their case, you know, even if you're treating someone or you're trying to come up with a plan that's going to be helpful for them for their mental health, you have to think about the ways in which they culturally interpret mental health symptoms.
Yes.
What is most helpful for them from the context of their community, their culture, the way that they view healing, like all of that.
Right. And I think that is a really important point because it's part of our ethics because another part of our ethics is to do no harm.
That part.
And harm is done when we are not culturally going into a great point.
Such a tongue twister.
Harm is done when we are not culturally competent.
I'm leaving that in.
I hate you.
It's so funny. You know, as we continue on the topic of how to be better humans in a polarized culture, part of unpolarizing things is seeing the fullness of other humans and ourselves, including all of the facets that make up who we are and thus shape the way we see the world, which is gonna vary from person to person because we have different cultural upbringings. And so we want to talk about that. And I think one of the reasons that we want to talk about that, like out the gate, kind of this first month of the podcast, is because we want to highlight that this wow, what is going on with us? We want to highlight that this is a core value to us and to the conversations that we're having going forward. And that that is something that you can expect, that we are going to be talking about culture and that we believe that it's important to not be culture blind. And that just aligns with our values of being culturally competent humans.
I really connect with that. because as someone who comes from so many different cultures, but was so blinded to them, I didn't even know how my own culture was affecting how I viewed myself and my life. And I also was not aware of how I was being treated because of my culture. Because I grew up in America where I thought that I was supposed to just blend in as much as possible.
Right.
And so there are aspects of this conversation that I think are really important because they help us understand ourselves too and accept and embrace ourselves.
Especially living in America. This is such a good conversation because America is
a melting pot.
It's a melting pot. It's an immigrant nation where you have so many people who have, unless you're indigenous, every single person has migrated here. And now we are this huge, eclectic mix of people, and we just continue to grow in diversity as a nation.
Right.
And so how can we not be having this conversation when we're thinking about how to be better humans through our differences?
Right.
Yeah.
So that leads us into our first topic. What is cultural intersectionality?
Intersection. How many syllables is that?
I know.
It's a long word.
Tell us about what that is.
Intersectionality was actually one of my favorite things that I learned about in cultural psychology and even in my graduate courses. Just this idea that we have all of these different social factors and cultural mixes that make up who we are, that we're not just one thing, we're not just a monolith, you know, that people have multiple layered parts of themselves and of their identity that's informed by various social and cultural factors such as race, ethnicity, gender, socioeconomic status, religion, language, disability, and more. And these identities don't exist in isolation on their own, but they're interwoven in complex ways, and they're always kind of intersecting with one another. And they all color the way that you view the world and yourself and the perspectives that you have.
Right.
Right. And so that's the idea of intersectionality, is how all of these various factors eclectically. I've been saying eclectic a lot today. I'm feeling very
eclectic.
Wow. Eclectic. You know, how they all are coming together to shape a perspective that's actually just going to be very unique. Because of
exactly
collection of unique.
I love that you said that word.
Unique.
Yes.
Unique New York. Unique New York. Have you had to say? That's my musical theater kid coming out. That's what we had to say. Unique New York.
Unique New York. Anyway, I love that you brought that word up. Unique.
Yeah.
Because life is such a balance of having an individuated, autonomous, strong sense of self.
Yeah.
That unique separation between you and the next person while still living as social creatures in community with others.
Right.
It's that balance. How to not let one affect the other too much.
Right.
But that deep awareness and understanding that I am unique, I'm supposed to be unique, my story, my experiences, my feelings, my thoughts, my beliefs, everything is unique because I am so different from the person sitting next to me. I mean, I look at my two sisters, there's three of us. We could not be more different than each other.
Right.
We grew up in the same household with the same parents, but with very different experiences, and actually not the same parents. Like I was watching this like video where they were talking about how siblings actually have different parents.
Oh, because of
because the parents are at different places.
Because they change.
In life. They change.
And they grow.
Yeah, exactly.
As time goes
so
on,
we're getting
and
a different
siblings come in.
We're getting a different version of them. So
yeah,
even with your own family unit, you are an individual. And I think that I love that you said that, because that is a really important part of having a strong sense of self in the midst of very unique and a myriad of different types of people.
And that it also explains why we can be looking at the same issue or at the same thing,
right,
but drawing very different perspectives, feelings, and conclusions about them, because what it is that we're looking at is being filtered by our intersectionalities.
Yes, and the more aware we are, the more conversations we allow ourselves to have, the more perspective we have, Mm-hmm. And the more we'll be able to celebrate what someone else's experience is, even if it's different from ours.
Yeah.
And not cause harm to people.
Again, with the harm.
Or invalidate yes. their experiences. So
I love that you said celebrate, because that's a part of what makes human beings beautiful, is that we have all these different layers from like the time period that we're born in makes us very different than the time period that other people were born in. It, you know, it changes the way that we view the world and move through the world, to like, again, the race we come from, the cultural ethnicity we come from, the type of, you know, faith that we grew up in. And not even just that, but even like locationally where we grew up.
Yeah.
Right?
The growing culture of up that society
in different parts of America mm-hmm. are very different experiences, even if we're all American.
Yes.
We have different experiences of America.
Yeah.
You know? So it's just like, I actually think that's so cool and so fascinating. And it makes me so curious. And it makes me just want to know everyone's story. But, like, I want to be a weirdo and just go up to every person that I know and just be like, what is your story? Like, I want to know, like, how do you see the world? Like, how does your yes. whole background shape your view? Like, what is that perspective like?
Well, that's the difference between curiosity and fear.
Yeah.
You have a curious mindset.
Right.
In every human you see, there's endless possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
When you're living out of fear, out of survival, out of protection, everything you see holds a threat,
mm-hmm.
a threat to your comfortability, your familiarity, your way of life, your yeah. way of doing things. It's a threat. And this process of understanding how culture affects us, expanding our minds to other people's experiences, allows us to shift from fear into curiosity.
I think I love that you brought that up, because I definitely want to circle back to this, as because I don't think that we can talk about the conversation of why people choose to be culture blind or hold on to not kind of getting to know other cultures or learn without talking about the fear piece.
Because
mm-hmm. there's also, I think, a large fear that's taking place as in our country, there is more diversity of views, diversity of thought, diversity right. of beliefs. There is also a big elephant in the room, in the country, of fear that mm-hmm. is growing alongside with that, you know, of holding on to a majority belief system, or holding on to just the fear of other people's cultures or beliefs impacting like your children,
mm-hmm.
you know, or
yeah.
different things like that. And it's a real fear,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so in response to that fear, you know, there's a lot of fighting against other cultures, mm-hmm. other belief systems, other, you know, what have you. And so we definitely want to talk more about that. But before we go into that, just coming back to how these intersectionalities shape our worldview. So the personal attitudes, beliefs, and behaviors that we may consciously or unconsciously have influence our interactions. So we're all looking at the world and at issues and at things, but from different angles.
Mm-hmm.
There's this really sweet kind of story, simple story that I like, and it's called The Blind Man and the Elephant. And I think this kind of illustrates what we're talking about. So in this parable, there are several blind men in a village who encounter an elephant for the first time. Okay.
Mm.
They're blind. They hear there's an elephant in town. They're encountering it for the first time, and they're touching different parts of the animal to learn about what an elephant is.
Mm-hmm.
And so one man feels the elephant's leg and concludes that an elephant is like a pillar. Another touches the tail and concludes that an elephant is a rope. Yet another touches the elephant's trunk and believes an elephant is like a tree branch, and so on and so on.
Mm.
So they each have a different perspective based on the part of the elephant that they've encountered.
Mm.
And so then they begin to argue about the elephant and like what it really is.
Wow.
Instead of, you know, realizing that each person was kind of right in their own way, they were just seeing different parts of it.
Wow. I love that.
And I think that's a great illustration of kind of what goes wrong when we are only accepting to our view of how the world works, of what works of world of the world and of people.
Right.
And we're using our perspective to be the sole definition.
Yeah.
Right. Rather than realizing, oh, there are other people seeing other sides of this, other angles, other parts of this because of their angle of the world, because of the way in which they're positioned.
Mm-hmm.
And this perspective is also a part of the whole.
Right.
That we want to take into consideration. And that's what context is.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that, you know, the question has to be asked, why, you know, why would it matter so much to the blind people that they were right? You know, like looking at what that represents in today's society, you know, going back to issues of God and religion, there's a lot of fighting there. There's a lot of disagreeing with one another. There's a lot of protecting one another from each other. A lot of that. Yeah. Same in politics. Same with other issues, social issues. There's a lot of that protection. And we feel the need to insist on our way and our perspective because there's something at stake.
Exactly. There's something at stake. There's something real at stake. And again, there is an underlying fear.
Exactly. Yeah. And so,
and that's real. And I don't want to be dismissive. We don't want to be dismissive.
Right.
It's like,
but that's where we have to.
We're not saying, you know, ditch all your values and beliefs and what have you to assimilate to what everyone. No, that's actually not at all what we're saying. We're saying, have your values, have your convictions, you know what I mean? Just be cognizant, be aware that there are others and there are also valid reasons why theirs exists and why they've landed where they've landed.
And also, yeah, absolutely. And being aware of the fact that something is at risk in your mind and being willing to explore what that risk is and maybe looking at some of the beliefs that you've come to hold that that are keeping you from being able to have relationship with people, from coming together and having conversation even.
Yeah.
What is keeping you from even being able to have a conversation and talk about it? There's something that's at risk, something that's being threatened.
Right.
And sometimes those are the beliefs that we need to bring to the surface and understand. So for example, if we're talking about someone who is afraid of all the diversity that's happening, that, you know, in our country, you've seen that Time magazine that's like, this is what everyone's going to look like in 50 years. You know, it's
right,
very ethnically ambiguous.
Eclectic again.
Right. And for some people, they're like, great, we celebrate that. Other people, that's a threat. And you have to stop and ask yourself, why is that such a threat? Yeah. Is it because there's an underlying belief that with certain ethnicities comes a certain type of way of living that's dangerous?
Mm.
Or with certain ethnicities or with a certain way of life, you know, and really being able to dig down into like, let me bring those things to the surface and understand what are my beliefs surrounding this type of culture?
Yeah.
This type of thing, because there's a threat there that I'm feeling.
Yeah, or even just a fear of loss, a fear of losing
your identity,
the way things have always been or the way things always were or the way, you know, maybe the country was. You know, there's a fear of change.
And as I get older, I feel that sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, no, I'm becoming.
Like, where are things going?
Right.
Oh, no. Yeah. This is not, this is out of my control. This is, you know, things are slipping away.
Right, or things are changing. Like, and again, that's the human mind doesn't actually like change.
That's very natural.
Yeah, it's very concrete.
I don't judge it
at
all.
It's like, a very real experience.
That's natural. I get that. And then especially when you have conversations where there are children involved and people are afraid that these new ways of thinking and being and believing are going to then be put on your kids.
Right.
And you really have the fear and the instinct to protect your children because in some way you believe that this could be harmful to them or harmful to their soul.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you talk about the soul being at stake. That's high stakes.
Right.
That's
and I think
stakes.
When it starts becoming damaging to the human spirit is when you have things like ethnocentrism, where you are feeling more superior. So now it's not just a threat or I'm in danger. I genuinely want to take care and protect people. It's like, we are better. We are superior.
This is the better way.
And it's not just, that doesn't just happen with race. It happens on both sides, on all sides, in every, we all kind of think we're a little bit better.
It could be anything.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
The conclusions that I've come to is the best way, and everyone needs to conform to this,
right?
Because it's the best way, you know, and that's that superiority. So ethnocentrism is the belief in the inherent superiority of one's own group or culture. It's a tendency to view other cultures through the lens of your own cultural norms, values, and beliefs, and results in the belief that your own culture is the standard against which all other cultures should be measured, that your group is superior to others or is the best way to be. I have a controversial question.
Oh my gosh. I know. I had so many of them in my mind.
We're just going to go there.
Okay.
Both of us come from the church.
The church is what she said.
The church. You know, and both of us feel very like secure in our faith in terms of like where we've gotten, and that's been its own rumble of, you know, our own rumbles with God of going through questions, through doubts, what have you, and we've gotten to this place. We're still growing and learning in our faith.
Oh, 100%.
But coming from church culture where there is a very real mandate to like spread the gospel, right? And that is like the intention, but also you're coming into cultures where people are also very strong in their own belief systems. You know, I want to talk about like ethnocentrism and the superiority factor that can trickle into us as people of faith, even people who are very well-meaning. About sharing the faith, which there's nothing wrong with that, with sharing the faith, obviously. But like, where's the slippery slope? Where's the blurred line to where, you know, you're humbly sharing your faith versus the superiority complex of we are the getting superior like.
And that's so interesting because my I am fourth generation Christian on my Indian side.
Okay.
Missionaries, Christian missionaries from America went out to India and they converted. Yes, they converted a bunch of people, including my great great grandpa, who was Hindu. And we always hear the stories of how that all happened and how he had to like run away from his village and he like burned all his idols and, you know, was very zealous. And it's just so interesting because when I look at Indians who are Christian and when I think about, you know, missionaries from America that went to India, they not only shared their faith, they also put limitations on how the people of India were allowed to self-express and experience their own culture.
Interesting.
And so when you talk about that kind of those blurred lines, I think this is definitely part of a pretty deep conversation that like hits close to home. Because in some ways, I don't know what it feels like to actually be Indian.
I see.
There are huge parts of my Indian experience that I think a lot of Christian Indians can also say too, that they are, because India is just a land of spirituality. India is like
it's like the Mecca.
Religions, but such deep spirituality that actually bleeds into every part of life. And so
I do know that, and I love that.
Yes.
It's not so compartmentalized.
It's not.
There's not like the secular and the spiritual.
No.
It's like everything.
Everything. It's in spiritual. Your lifestyle.
Yeah.
So there are lots of festivals. There are lots of things. And yeah, absolutely. They have to do with the different gods. There are so many gods. There's so many, all of those types of things. And it's so interesting because when Christianity came to people in India that became Christian, you'll go back there and see that they're very Western. They're actually,
in the way that they practice their
faith. Way, not only in their faith,
yeah,
but in other aspects of life, because okay. they don't or can't celebrate some of these holidays. They can't, do some of these other things because anything that had any connection to a god or to something else
right.
was totally like, you cannot do that or you're literally, going to hell. And so
right.
I'm sharing with you an extreme example. This has to do with these Eastern practices that we are so afraid of.
Oh my gosh.
In Christianity and in the Western world, because we've blended the two. So we're like, hey, if you do certain poses, that means the demons are going to come into you.
Yeah, I've heard this with yoga.
Yes.
Know.
And it's like, well, not necessarily.
I'm like, I've practiced yoga for years
it's
and I haven't had
of years
a single
old.
Demon
right.
take me yet.
But I want to like point out yeah. that there can be some subtle subconscious racism, that ethnocentrism that's in some of this rhetoric.
Yeah.
When we say, yes, you can be Christian, but you can't do some of these other things because of this or that. And who really has researched this, by the way? The people who do talk about, yoga, meditation, breathing. Yes, there's a whole nuance in those
yes.
areas.
Yes.
Yeah, there are absolutely shades of those things that can be like, oh yeah, we're not used to that in America. Maybe we won't do that or
yeah.
whatever, or because we're Christian. But to throw everything out is kind of bleeding into
assimilation.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen this too, where it's like anything that comes from the East or
yes.
Eastern culture
right.
is automatically associated with the demonic.
Right.
I've seen that, and I've seen that more and more strongly.
Yes.
And I'm like, whoa. I'm like, what is this? There's like this huge talk about biases.
Yeah.
Against anything that is related to mm-hmm. Eastern culture.
Mindfulness, meditation, being
right.
aware of your own thinking. I remember hearing, if you empty your mind and think of
the
nothing.
Devil's then the devil's going to fill it.
Exactly. Then they would reference yeah. like there'd be some Bible reference to that too. And it's again, that type of, it's not critical thinking.
It's not
looking at it in a
yeah.
nuanced way. It's taking one little idea and belief and spreading it on this whole,
making it so extreme.
I mean, there's research now on yoga, meditation, and all of these things on how wonderful it is for your health, your
yeah.
physical, mental, emotional
yeah.
health.
Yeah, and there are ways to practice it
yes.
that are still aligned with your faith, with your convictions. You know what I mean? You can still, you don't have to leave those parts of you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And if there's at any point, say you go to a certain yoga, mindfulness, meditation practice. If you don't feel comfortable with it, don't go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If it is really causing you distress and coming into, contradiction.
Right.
Heavily with like what your convictions
sure.
are.
Yeah.
Do not go.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I would never tell anyone to go do anything against their
right.
convictions, but also know that it's not black and white. And
mm-hmm.
I love mindfulness, meditation, yoga, yoga has helped me physically in so many ways
yes.
where I've seen actual physical results, and I've been able to practice it in a way where I can stay aligned with my own system of beliefs.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
It
gets really extreme.
It does.
And like you said, there is not only no critical thinking, there isn't really solid evidence
mm-hmm.
around some of the things that are being claimed. Like,
yeah.
I'm not going to dismiss certain people's experiences who say they've experienced
mm-hmm.
certain things
mm-hmm.
doing these things. I cannot speak to that.
Right.
I can only speak to myself and others who I know who have found benefit and still been able to center their own convictions and values and beliefs.
Yeah.
Within a physical practice that is evidentially helpful.
Right.
And that's all I can speak to.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm not going to let anybody demonize me or my own practice, you know, based off of these extremities and these cultural biases.
Yeah. And it goes beyond yoga, meditation, and some of the Eastern practices. We do ourselves a disservice in the Western world by feeling and thinking that we know it all and we have it all, and our version of Christianity is everything. Because the truth is that, you know, while we're on the subject of religion and Christianity, the religion that Jesus lived out and the Christianity that we see in the Bible is very Eastern.
That's Eastern in culture, Eastern
in mindset. And we do ourselves a disservice by adhering to a primarily Western way of living, because there's so much the East has to teach us, because they're humans and their spirituality and everything has been around for thousands and thousands of years.
Yeah.
So beyond just the practices that are now kind of being adopted more, you know, openly in America and in the West, there are other ways of thinking. But if we automatically have in our minds, I am Christian, I do not touch anything that's outside because that means that it is of the devil. As much as that is what we grew up with, that it's detrimental to being a human, to your way of life, to finding fulfillment, meaning there's so much we have to learn outside of what we've just been taught in a Western version of Christianity.
It's dehumanizing at the end of the day to say, like, these people are evil, you know, because they, you know, are outside of.
It's really weird. It's kind of weird, if I can just say that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and growing up as like kind of a, like, I'm white on the inside, brown on the outside, you know? I grew up that
way.
There's
a lot of unpacking to do there.
There's a lot of unpacking. Yeah. But like, you know, it's because like growing up in Michigan and Ohio and just in the West, there was so much that I would subtly hear from different people that caused me to hate my own culture.
Yeah.
And see it as wrong. Mm. And so there's so much
like
about who I am.
Internalized racism.
Yes. Where I realized I was kind of racist against myself.
That's a real thing.
Yes.
Internalized racism. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so those are just other ways that it exhibits and parts of you that are never explored because you've drawn a line in the sand based on something that's not, that's been handed to you. And of course, we're just talking about religious contexts. This can go into other contexts.
Well, since we're going there.
Just go there.
We're just going to go there. You know, I think that when it comes to being a person of faith or being a Christian, that's not to say, you know, don't share your faith or stop sharing your faith. Mm. But I think we're talking more about the ways in which we are being culturally sensitive in practicing our faith.
Yeah.
Is really like what we're talking about. And there, to me, there's like the Jesus way of practicing faith. And then there's the post doctrine of discovery way of practicing faith. Mm. Right. So the doctrine of discovery.
Yeah. Tell us what that
is. Y'all. These are kind of the uglier sides, right, of the historical narrative of our faith.
Yeah.
And obviously,
they have to be talked about.
They just have to be talked about because they shape the way that we go into how we interact with the rest of the world. So the doctrine of discovery was a papal decree in 1493 that was kind of decreed by the Pope at that time that aimed to justify for Christian explorers in the name of their sovereign to lay claim to territories uninhabited by Christians by violently seizing it from people who had been living there for generations.
Mm.
So the church at the time authorized colonial powers such as Spain and Portugal to seize lands and subjugate people in Africa and the New World, which is now America, you know, along with the indigenous people, you know, as long as those lands weren't Christian, they were allowed to do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have to consider there was a time where Christianity historically shifted to being integrated with politics, power, and control, which was not the faith that Jesus practiced. Actually,
right.
It was the opposite, because Jesus was basically in the oppressed population. Rome was in control.
Right.
Jesus was living in under the control of a pagan nation.
Yeah.
Where this was not the majority faith,
mm-hmm.
you know, and navigating that under a pagan nation.
Right.
They weren't the ones that were in control, you know. And so it's interesting how then you see this shift as the Romans get a hold of Christianity, specifically with Constantine, you know. And Constantine really is taking on the Christian faith and assimilating it.
Yeah.
You know, he's kind of like, hey, we're not going to stone Christians anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not going to light them on fire anymore. Like, we're not going to punish them for what they believe. We're going to stop persecuting them.
I think he had, all his soldiers, go into the water with their horses. And that was, assumed that they were baptized.
Oh,
he had them all.
He's kind of like, everyone
coming
just
together.
Just chill, you know. He was kind of like, if you're pagan, you can do that. If you're Christian,
mm-hmm.
you can do that. And he kind of assimilated. They consider him one of the first Christian emperors in Rome.
Yeah.
You know, and then from there, Christianity gained a lot of power.
Right.
So it shifted the power dynamic to where now it was the main framework. And again, it was affiliated with more being on the side of power.
Right.
So, and then you see years later where, you know, the Western world gets a hold of it, and now they're using this as a form of power to subjugate any countries or any other cultures or groups of people who were not under this, that they had this divine right to take power and control over them in the name of God. Obviously, we see this with the Crusades, which is a very sore spot of, you know, our Christian faith, where again, in between the 11th and 13th century, they had the Crusades to extend the reach and authority of the church that were primarily directed against Muslims, Slavs, Jews, and the Byzantine Empire and political opponents of the Roman church. So, okay, why do I bring all that up? I do not bring that up to bash the church. See, people have this thing. Anytime I bring up some of these nuances that aren't so great,
mm-hmm.
they must think, oh, you're being anti-Christian. You must be active. No, I'm highlighting this so we can see the ways in which man and ego and power and control have entered the narratives of how we practice faith.
Right.
And how, you know, actually as a part of our history, some of these narratives are still operating in the ways that we see people of other cultures and deal with these things.
Right.
You know?
And I think that if this conversation is causing discomfort in any way, this is the type of discomfort that is so important to sit in, to understand, and to try to grapple with different perspectives, informed perspectives from history, what brought us to the place that we're at as Christians, because these are very real influences that are still, you know, some of those influences are still
undercurrenting.
Oh, they are so in the undercurrents. And I think, you know,
of how we bring faith to people.
Yeah.
We're bringing it from this place of superiority, and, you know, we have the right to kind of maintain this primary position of power.
Right.
You know?
And whenever religion, you know, links up with power, it's just it's the opposite of what faith is supposed to be.
Right.
And that experience of spirituality, instead it becomes a kind of rigid religious stance that is part of your identity and that gives you, you know, your feelings of value and worth, and that gives you your sense of superiority. And that whole thing is completely non-existent when you look at the Eastern version of
Jesus.
That's and who he was.
Exactly.
It makes no sense to me. And even now, even on my journey of deconstruction and my journey of understanding my own faith, there are so many people that do get threatened and they're like, do you even believe in Jesus? Do you even believe in God? And I'm like, look, I know nothing. At the end of the day, I know nothing. I'm okay with admitting that, but I choose to believe certain things because I do see evidence and I think that's a meaningful way to live life. I believe in God. But it's funny that people always ask me, do you even believe in Jesus? Because I'm like, that is the that's the only thing I believe in now. It's not your version, but like that version, like God, Jesus has always been
the center.
I know. He's always been the one that actually shows us what you're supposed to live like as a good human. People are like, oh, do you believe that Jesus is God though? Like that, you know, he's not just a teacher. And I'm like, yes. I get that. And yes, but like even more than that, like Jesus is what makes up my religion now, because there's so much that has been steeped in the structural side of Christianity.
Yeah.
That is so far from the mark.
That's why I wanted to talk
and
about
I'm like,
it. Because,
that's why people are leaving. It makes sense.
And the thing is, that's exactly what they wanted from Jesus in Jesus' time.
Yes.
They were hoping that Jesus was going to come with a rod, you know, they were hoping that Jesus was going to come
with judgment.
They were hoping Jesus would come to take over the politics,
right?
You know what I mean? Of the time
and make things
that
right.
He would, take over with power. And you get it because they were an oppressed people,
right?
As Jews, as Hebrews, they were under the oppression of the Roman rule,
right?
You know, and they were hoping that Jesus was going to come, take over all that, and come with all this authority. And instead, he just moved in this very relational way, you know, of like the people that were already around him and spreading the word person to person and having real life experiences, eating with people, drinking with people, touching people, like physically, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's the way that he moved.
Right.
And so me personally, you know, that has always made the most sense to me.
Absolutely.
In terms of how I move through my faith.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I am personally not interested in power, in control, in using tactics of fear, or in needing to enforce choices and decisions on people through the lens of my faith.
Yeah. And bringing that all back to intersectionality.
Yeah.
And looking at how Jesus lived his life.
How did Jesus move?
I love that Jesus talks so much, I love that the Bible brings in so many different cultures.
Yeah.
Even just in the few years that Jesus, you know, that they have recorded of his life, there's so many different cultures that he interacts with.
Yeah.
People from all over, you know, whether it's Romans, whether it's Samaritans, whether it's Ethiopians, or, you know, or people from Africa, like different parts. There's just so many different, like, cultures that were there.
Yeah.
There were genders that were there. There were disabilities.
Yeah.
There were
lots of disabilities.
Caste systems. And I really think that that was a major highlight of Jesus's life and experience, because it was all about humanity. It wasn't about the walls that were built up between these people out of protection and fear. It was about breaking down those cultural barriers so that Jesus could show people, this is what it's like to treat humans
as like humans.
Yes, when it's when you're stripped of all these identities and when you see someone for who they are, which is a conglomerate of, you know, experiences, feelings, emotions, you know, value, so much value innately. And you know, that's why it just makes me so sad. Like when you see things on the news and you hear about just how people can treat each other.
Yeah.
It's based on these biases and these beliefs that dehumanize, but Jesus
is superiority.
That was not a part of who Jesus was at all.
Right.
And as far as I know, from what I've heard and seen and been brought up to believe, Christianity is supposed to be based on Jesus.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure, right?
At the end of the day. Christ is in the word.
But it is so interesting how much we forget that, because it is, because we've been so caught up in like the cultural and political and structural aspects, the traditions of
and the very Western lens of how to go about Christianity.
Yeah, it's almost like you have to, in order to, and truly, this is all encompassing in this whole conversation, whether it's religion or politics or anything, individuating yourself, being able to find what you believe about people, having a human view of the person in front of you feels lonely because now you don't fit in a box.
Yes, that part is so true.
You don't have this whole crew of people or this whole, you know, demographic or this whatever that you can come up and rally with and be like, yeah, you suck, or like, yeah, you're wrong, or like, we were right. It feels very lonely because you don't fit in a box anymore.
You're like in this middle ground. I think that's how a lot of people felt over the past couple of years. I know that the term spiritual orphan was going around a lot because a lot of people felt like they were pit into being in like on one side or another. And then you had these people who were thinking more critically, who were saying, actually, I don't think these things are black and white. I don't think life is black and white. I think that there are nuances within people's stories, within these topics, within these conversations, within, you know, people's cultural contexts that matter in this conversation, that I cannot talk about this or think about this in just a black and white way.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so, and actually many of these people are backing this in accordance to their faith, in accordance in their call to love their neighbor. You know what I mean? And the problem is, like, if you, it's easier to be polarized.
Yeah.
It's easier to be polarizing because then you can, like you said, you can just have your amen
people.
You can people.
Identify.
You can
with
identify
a group.
Very strongly with this group or that group. And you can have your people rallied around you. Mm-hmm. But people freaking hate it when you're just like, actually, I can see multiple sides. Yeah. Like, they don't want to hear that. That's not as clickbaity. Mm-hmm. It's not as catchy as a sound bite. You know, it requires you to think a little bit more.
Yeah.
And so people actually would just want you to fall into one category or the other.
Yes. And this conversation is so important because, and when you can enter into the experience of nuance and treating people just for being people,
right,
you do open up a whole other world of being able to build community, friendships, experiences that are not based on these groups.
Right.
Like, I'm only hanging out with them because they, you know, are of this political affiliation, or I'm only hanging out with them because, oh, they go to my church, or they're part of my religion, or they don't do certain things that I don't do.
Yeah.
Now you open yourself up to the world of humans who are so complex and nuanced, and you can actually, as much as certain subgroups try to teach us that you can only find community within people who are like you, you start finding community and curiosity with everyone and with people that you're like, hey, I can really appreciate who you are as a whole.
I value you saying that. It just like turned on that, those kind of phrases that you hear, which is like, dark should not mix with light and light should not mix with dark. And using, you know, those types of phrases is what is backed up is like, oh, you should stay within your people, your group,
and do
who
you
think
and like,
feel and believe as you do. But then I also think about like,
how dehumanizing is
that's
that?
So dehumanizing
to say, like, you're a
to
dark
say
person.
These people are dark.
It's really sad.
They're in the darkness
because they
we're
do
in
certain
the light.
Things. They look a certain way.
We're in the light,
right.
And therefore, as people in the light, we are not gonna be associating
that's such
with
a
these
superiority
people in the
complex.
Darkness.
Yes,
and I've come to learn that, like, sure, you could take something like that and make a judgment based off of that one verse. But I think that's the problem. I think you're only taking one.
Yeah, out of context.
Out of context. Mm-hmm. And you're creating a whole system of thinking based off of just one.
Yeah.
And not taking into context all the other myriad of verses and of messages, you know, about us, you know, loving our neighbor. And like, even when Jesus says, like, if I tell you to love your neighbor, like anyone can do that, I'm asking you to love your enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He's
right.
saying, like, but then some people will say, he called us to love with them, but not to mix.
Wow.
With them. Right? There's so many I could go to. Yes. Where like, oh, wait. There's so many narratives.
And I see
that
where, yeah.
keep us, that are ingrained, that tell us
right.
other people are dark. We are not to associate with them. And they will contaminate us.
Yeah. Wow.
Bad company ruins good character.
Okay. So, oh, that is so.
Are you triggered?
I'm sad.
Yeah.
That's the emotion I'm feeling right now.
Yeah.
Because I was there. Yeah. And I know how easy it is to be in that mindset. And I see why people say that.
You can see it.
You can see.
If you gather all of these specific verses
right.
in this way.
Yeah. Like,
again, with the confirmation bias, but you're leaving out other ways to interpret.
Right. And it's out of fear.
Yeah.
Right? So there's always something we're trying to protect whenever there's some dehumanization going on.
Yeah.
And so there's this threat that, say, my daughter, who I want her to be saved.
Yeah.
If I let her go hang out with these people who, in my mind, I've equated their lifestyle beliefs or whatever to being not saved.
To be dark.
To be on the dark side, because I believe this whole narrative of, like, you know, they're just evil. You know, of course there's going to be that threat and that protection. And that protection is going to cause you to want to put a wall between.
Because we're talking about salvation and your
high
child.
High risk.
High stakes.
High stakes.
High stakes.
Exactly. So I see why people think that and feel that. And I see why I used to have such an us versus them mentality, because it was such freaking high stakes.
Yeah,
like, I ain't losing my salvation, you know, like that.
Yeah.
Or like, oh, I don't want to lead people astray, or like the shame that comes with being the person on the dark side.
Yeah.
And how hard it is to go from that to actually realizing, like, oh my goodness, people, there are not lifestyles and choices and things people do that make them evil or bad, where
right.
they, you know, it's actually, especially being in the field of mental health.
Yeah.
It is a deep loss of self sometimes. Sometimes it's also just self-expression. Those things aren't bad. You just don't like that.
The way that they express themselves.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You don't like the way they express themselves. It's not a moral thing. It's not moralized. It's a preference.
Yeah.
Those are the things that we used to categorize as evil and bad.
Yeah.
But it's really crazy how we create a whole narrative out of it and then feed that to a group of people who then, now that has very real implications to their relationships, their mental health, how they interact with people.
And how you demonize people now.
How you demonize. And so now it sounds ludicrous, but back then it made sense.
Yeah.
And I just think it's, man, it's really sad how we do that. Like,
yeah,
I hate to say that, but I really do think that it's tough for religion to not create that us versus them mentality if they're not careful.
If that is how your theological framework operates.
You never saw that in Jesus's life, like literally ever.
Yeah.
So I don't know where, how, I mean, I do know, but.
I always blame the Romans.
That's so funny. Went back to Hellenism.
That, yeah, all of that.
Yeah.
Wow, we went there. So, everyone just a deep breath. If you're holding any tension and you're feeling like this conversation is a lot, it's so tense. Like,
even my own heart,
I feel
just
a little tense talking about it. There's so many parts of me, of my intersectionality.
It's really sad because
that's like,
one of the very real implications is that when I was in very strongly in this mindset, my own family, I pitted myself against them.
Right.
I was pitted against them to feel as if
they were
on
in darkness.
So
yeah.
I'm talking about the very real deep implications of being someone who my glasses, the filter that were on my glasses when I looked at my family was like, ugh.
Even though
I can't
they
stand
believed
them.
In Jesus.
Oh, yeah. And now they're the ones that actually saved me.
But because they didn't, believe it the way that you believed it.
Back then,
they were in darkness.
Just constant judgment. It was constant criticism. I have, you know, in very real ways, lost, like, years of time to make memories, bond, create you know, a bond between us. And it's mending now, and they're just such generous people.
Yeah, they're like the best humans.
My sister is my mom and dad. They're like literally the best people. And how much those some of those deep-seated religious beliefs caused me to be so disconnected from them.
Yes.
I was closer to the people that I worked with and the people I was reaching than my own family.
That's why exposure is so freaking important.
Yeah.
Because it's so easy to dehumanize and demonize people if you are never or rarely around them, or if you are around them in a surface level way. Because then you don't have to really see all of their humanity. Then you don't have to see all the other parts of them. And then you go, oh, wait, maybe they're not all darkness.
Yeah.
And wow, that I just categorize this whole human being as
person
in darkness.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like, I look at them and I'm like, you are all better humans than I am. Like, you've always been.
You're more
like,
humble.
I had the religious jargon. I had the biblical knowledge, but they had the love.
That literally is like the Pharisee versus, right?
Yes.
Like, I have my Pharisee phase for sure. I definitely have my Pharisee phase. And that's when you think you're at the height of your faith.
You feel so
when you're
secure.
Actually at the most immature place in your faith.
Yeah, the most ignorant.
The most ignorant, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm. There's a lot there.
It's a lot.
There's a lot. Moving on. Just some light conversation. I think that we also can't talk about, I guess, switching over now to just the layers of culture and now how that impacts our mental health and also our views of the world around us. So something that I always like to mention is that when people think of culture, I think they just think of like one aspect of culture, like, oh, maybe the culture is that you're Black, or the culture is that you're Indian, or the culture is that you're American, or whatever it is. But culture, there's the larger culture, but then there's also a subset of cultures.
Right.
Within the larger context, you know, for example, you may live according to the larger modern day American culture, but then you have maybe the subculture of being raised in the Black community or the Latino community or the white or Asian community, right? And then that may further intersect with living in church subculture that have shaped the worldviews, doctrines, and lifestyles, even like the fashion.
Oh, yeah.
Have you noticed, like, even certain churches maybe have different ways that they dress?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a part of the subculture. Or the subculture of even just being in a church in the South versus a church in, like, Hollywood, LA, where I live. I've been to, like, because I lived in Dallas, Texas for a while.
Oh, wow.
And I'm obviously raised in LA. And being on the East Coast and in the South in different areas and different churches and different spaces, even there, it's like, there's a different subculture in the way that you do church and the way that you live out your faith and what have you, kind of based on what region of the country that you're in. It can look different the way that you practice your faith, which is fascinating to me. And so all of these layers, from the country you live in to what parts of the country you were raised in to your racial background to the doctrinal beliefs you've adapted, are coexisting together, shaping your way of living, your perspectives, and your choices. So that goes back to the intersectionalities. Just because I say I'm Black, that doesn't necessarily mean I automatically have the same experience as someone else who says they're Black, or just because I say I'm Christian, that doesn't mean I automatically view things the same, have the same doctrine that someone else does that says that they're Christian, right?
Yeah.
There are different subsets of cultures and intersectionalities that shape our perspectives, even within the larger culture, that we just want to be aware of so that we are not assuming of folks.
And then even more granular, when you come into your family system, you are now being influenced by your parents' individual influences of their cultures, their, you know, where they're from and all of that, and your own and the context that you're growing up in, too. So there are so many different influences that come at us.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, religion is just one of those areas. And there's so many other areas that make up who you are and what forms your sense of identity.
Yeah, I like bringing up the faith piece because obviously that's been like a big part of our lives. And, you know, because people always ask me, like, if you're a Christian, should you only see a Christian therapist? And my whole thing is like, it obviously would probably be ideal, you know, if you have someone who already knows kind of the foundations of what you believe. But also keep in mind, just because, you know, I have a client who's Christian or you have a therapist that's Christian, that doesn't mean they believe everything that you believe. Right? Like, there's a difference in doctrine if you come from a Pentecostal church, a Baptist church, the Catholic church, you know, a Reformed church background, Arminianism. Like, there's so many different beliefs in doctrine, in theology, in views. Obviously, there are certain things that are central. Yeah. But even within the faith, there's a spectrum of what people believe. Which I think is actually really beautiful. You know, because I think they all bring something different and all have different even strengths that they bring to, you know, the body. But and that's what makes it beautiful. But again, like, just because someone says they are labeled in a certain way, that doesn't mean, and as in our training, you know, we are taught, like, don't, you can't just assume that because someone identifies this way, that these are what their beliefs and values and lifestyles are. You have to get to know them. You have to get to know them from their framework. So that you can work in a manner that is most helpful for them.
And even for someone who is asking that question, like, should I only go to a Christian therapist? When I was finally going to therapy, I specifically went to someone who wasn't from my particular church and my particular Christian faith. And I don't know if I still to this day don't know if she was like super Christian. They normally don't like volunteer that unless you ask. But that was a really good perspective for me because she was able to see some blind spots in ways that I was living out more religious beliefs that were handed to me that weren't good for my mental health.
That were like legalistic.
Yeah, that you never know, you know, who you're going to get and if maybe they're in that same mindset. And so I think it's just... it's scary. It's so scary stepping outside of what you've been told is safety, but it's super important. And it's important because what keeps us within those four walls is ultimately what keeps us from having real vulnerable relationship with the people around us. And creating a, you know, humane, loving society around us. It is those it is those walls that separate. And it's scary to step out and it's scary to look at other people's perspectives, but it's deeply important. And it's probably the best thing that I've ever done, but it has been scary every step of the way.
It's interesting for me because I came from someone who had a very diverse experience and background and then got caught up in the whole us versus them, stay in your group. Don't mix dark with light, meaning anyone who is outside of what you think, feel, and believe is dark. What an assumption. You know, to coming out of that and still being able to hold on to my values, convictions, and beliefs while being able to be culturally sensitive to everyone who's around me. So I think there was something valuable in each stage. Right? Like one stage taught me how to find, you know, security and stand for what I believe and what have you. And then the other side taught me how to still be a loving human to people around me and see them as human. You know, and be able to, just be able to integrate. So at this point, I think just really quickly, it'll be helpful to map out kind of the layers of culture. In being a microsystem, a mesosystem, and a macrosystem.
So we are all affected by these different layers. And in your microsystem is who you're immediately surrounded by, like the day that you're born. So your family, that's a huge, massive influence system that surrounds you, your home life, your childhood. You take so many beliefs and so many things are handed to you from your parents, from your siblings, from your home, you know,
cultural traditions,
yes,
cultural values.
Exactly. The things that you grew up as norms. Like, these are norms. This is reality. This is truth. This is what's good. This is what's safe. Comes at the beginning from your microsystem.
Yeah.
And that's a lot to unpack. And then the mesosystem are your local conditions. So your community, school, the school you go to, your workplace, your church.
That type is, of church you go to.
Exactly.
Type of school you go to.
Mm-hmm. Each of those contexts has a lot of influence. The people in those contexts have a lot of influence on how you, what shapes who you are.
Yeah.
And what you believe.
I also want to highlight really mm-hmm. quickly how it influences your mental health, because like how, even just how your culture and how your community views mental health.
Right.
Is going to shape how you view your mental health.
Right.
Is it something that's swept up under the rug? Is it something that's not really even a thing?
Yeah.
You know, is it demonic?
Yeah.
Is it, you know, is it a sin mm-hmm. to have depression and anxiety? Is mm-hmm. that the message that you got? Is, you know,
you're just crazy.
Is it you're just crazy? Mm-hmm. Or is it, you know, weakness? Or is it something that's just spiritual? Like, you know what I mean? Your
yes.
view of mental health, and thus the way that you see your mental health, the way that you deal with your mental health, the way that you cope.
Right.
That's all going to be shaped by this micro and meso system
mm-hmm.
of how the narrative of mental health was passed down to you.
Right.
And that's why understanding these cultural layers
yes.
is important, because then you can begin to understand, where did my perspectives about these things come from?
Right. And even gender expectations too.
That's a big one.
That's a big one, you know,
yeah.
like the... You know, and that's a big conversation, but there are norms, there are expectations, there
yeah.
are, you know, ways that we grow up feeling, believing we have to be and act.
Yeah. That's going to differ from household to household.
Because, mm-hmm.
like, my mom was the breadwinner. Like,
yeah,
she
yeah.
worked all the time.
Yeah.
So she actually didn't do as much of the stereotypical
yeah.
woman things in the home.
Mm-hmm.
She could, but she didn't have time because
right.
she was working.
Yeah.
You know, so then for me, it was interesting because getting married, it was like, even I'm so grateful that I have a husband and partner who also just had a flexible
yeah.
view mm-hmm. of gender roles.
Right.
To where he wasn't expecting me to fulfill these traditionally female roles in the house. Like, oh, she has to cook. She has to clean. She
right.
has to be the one to do A, B, and C.
Right.
We literally share all yes. of our roles at home equally.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you see that he sees the dishes, he's going to do it. He's not waiting for me to do it.
Right.
And it's so fulfilling for our marriage. Like,
yeah.
it's been so healthy for us, actually. So, now, some people love the traditional
yes.
norms.
Uh-huh.
I don't blame them. Like, if your husband's going to work all day and you're like, I'll take care of the house, like, girl, go off. I'm for that too. Like, you know, I'm also not against either. It's
right.
just like what works for you.
Yes.
You know, what works for, again, the economy we live in, things are different.
Mm-hmm.
That's another context you have to take into perspective.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just even knowing like how these.
And how it affects your mental health.
And how that affects your mental health and your relationships.
Yes, because if there is an expectation on you for being a woman, for example,
yeah,
you know, or all the expectations or whatever it is,
yeah.
like that can really affect, because then you're thinking, well, I'm not measuring up.
To being a mom. Oh,
to being a mom, to being
a wife,
whatever, right,
to being a woman.
To being a woman.
Yeah.
And all the expectations that are put on you there. Like, if you're not aware of how culture puts that on you.
The narratives that are going around.
Right.
How
and
you're not matching up to those narratives.
Right.
And that narratives can be changed.
Exactly. And it's not true for everyone.
Yeah.
And it's not like, you know, creed. It's not truth.
Creed. I like that.
Yes, going old school.
Very official going.
Yes. But yeah, it's just like everyone is unique. But if we're not aware
yeah.
of how these different systems affect us
yeah.
and influence us, then we'll create in ourselves beliefs and expectations, and then we'll constantly feel like a failure.
And I was going to say, we'll create a life around those
yes.
expectations,
like,
even though they
decisions.
Don't fit
mm-hmm.
us.
Yeah, we'll make massive decisions based on the need to fulfill an expectation that we think will give us value, because that's our identity.
Talk about mental health crises. An existential crisis
existential
in the making.
Existential crises.
Perfect setup.
I know, because then your whole life is a lie.
And you're like, then you wake up and you're like,
all of this for
I hate everything about everything I'm doing.
Yeah.
This it's a whole depresses thing. My whole life depresses me.
Right. Like everything.
Why
I
am
thought
I doing
was
these
real.
Things?
Everything I thought was real. Everything I thought was what I was supposed to do. I did it so perfectly and yet I'm still here. That's the real implication of not being aware of how these different
narratives.
Systems and narratives, mm-hmm. You know, they might not all be true and they might not all be for you.
Boom, boom.
I like that.
Macro systems.
Macro systems. So, yes, our macro systems are the national ideologies, the
so many feelings.
Oh, my goodness. The news, the media, our culture as a whole.
Yes.
Individualistic societies.
Versus a collectivist
right,
society.
Which tend
Those
to be a little
different.
Bit more Eastern.
Like, exactly. So we're used to being in an individualistic society, but it isn't the only way of being. There are
right.
also collectivist ways of being, but our cultural narrative is individualistic. So we are now living in a post-industrial, capitalist, social media-driven society where the demands are never-ending and the need to hustle for a place of significance in this world really drives us and also drives an unprecedented level of anxiety. And all these dynamics are affecting our mental health as a whole. So when we're thinking about the macro system and our mental health, we're thinking about these kind of narratives and ways of and expectations of living and being that exist in the culture at large.
Right.
And this is why traveling is great. Again.
Yeah.
Because then you go like,
and you're
for
like,
us
what?
Going
they
to Italy, yeah. we're like, oh, this is a different way to live. I like this. So we don't have
right.
to live this way that we've been living.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, a cultural expectation we've had as a norm.
Right.
You know, but I don't have to live in this fast pace hustle to get my significance and
right.
worth and achieve all these external
to make
measures.
Millions of dollars to have freedom to do so you don't have to work and go everywhere. And, you know, it's very Western. But you look at some of the people that we pity and we're like, oh, other countries. Oh, send missionaries. Go do this. Poor them. You look at some of those people when you actually go to those countries. They are not burdened down by some of the anxieties and mental illness
it's
that
true.
We are because they have a different lifestyle.
And they have a different way that they view a meaningful life.
Exactly.
I mean, I always love looking at documentaries. There's one on Netflix right now about the Blue Zones,
which
are where people are more on average living to be centenarians.
Yes.
They're living to be 100.
Little prideful plug. Seventh-day Adventist is where I grew up, right? Is
yeah.
how I grew up. They're one of the Blue Zone
well,
people.
I believe that because of diet, too, right? And
but
then, like, Greece and different parts
right.
because of their way of life, which is slower, which is more
mm-hmm.
relational,
right.
which is more communal. They're more intergenerational in the way they take care of the elderly, you know, the way that they eat, right? And so, like,
holistic.
You see this and you're like, do we really have all the answers, or is this just a narrative that we all believed is the way?
Right, exactly.
I mean, it's not all bad, but like, again,
of course.
Looking, taking the good with the not so great, and you can realizing you can actually create your own narrative that, again, works for you physically and mentally.
Yeah, and it's an individual journey.
Yeah.
The whole process of understanding all of these influences, how Western society affects your sense of self.
Yeah.
Am I good enough? Am I behind?
Oof.
I'm not where everyone else is.
I'm like,
I'm
in
not.
This economy, we're really asking these
people still
questions.
Feel that way. I talk to my coaching clients and it's just deep suffering.
Yeah.
Because they are not where everyone else is. This feeling of, you know, I'm never going to be good enough. I'm never going to achieve my goals. But there's just so much more outside of that.
And there's so much that's put on external achievement in order to live a fulfilling and meaningful life, which is just not a truth.
Yeah.
It's just a truth that we've accepted, but it's also causing us misery. So why?
Yes. And I think that is like the major point of and takeaway of this for me personally is the reason that you want to be so aware and understand these influences and break down certain beliefs that you were handed and choose healthier ones for yourself is because ultimately this is your one life. This is your one life. This is your mental health. This is your sense of self, your fulfillment. And as long as you are looking to all the other identities and all the other external, you know, systems to give you a feeling of, yeah, you fit in. Oh, yeah, you fit in. You fit in with us. You fit in with us. As long as you're looking to that, you are not only going to suffer greatly internally because you're just so much more nuanced than that. You're going to feel alone and lonely and lost.
Yeah.
And when you can accept that you're actually supposed to feel a little bit of loneliness in life almost at all times, you will always feel a little lonely. That's the way it's supposed to be. You're an individual. You're unique. Yeah. You will find people here and there in life, and you'll find actual communities that do think the same way as you. But the way they think the same way as you is that they're open to mindsets,
it's
right?
It's not exactly the way that...
So it's such an individual journey. Life is an individual journey. You'll find more fulfillment, meaning, happiness when you're able to relate and accept certain things, but also know that what you think and your values and your path is also just okay.
Yeah.
Your timeline, everything. It's just okay. You're enough.
I love that as a takeaway. And on takeaways, really just, again, highlighting what cultural competency is. Cultural competency is being open to, respectful of cultural differences rather than being dismissive or judgmental. And it's really seeking to understand the cultural norms, values, and practices of others, especially those who you work with or serve, or who are just around you in life. And this really going back to the opening of our episode where we were talking about how being culture blind is not a solution, because to be culture blind is to be ignorant of the very nuances that have shaped the person into who they are standing before you. And we can't be afraid of truly seeing people and the dynamics of both the beauty and the hardship that have played into their culture and that have affected their well-being. And in order to get anywhere, to be fruitful in our relationships and whatever it is that we're trying to accomplish through our relationships, we have to have cultural humility. And this was defined by researchers in 2013, referenced in the show notes, as the ability to maintain an interpersonal stance that is other-oriented or open to the other in relation to aspects of cultural identity that are most important to them.
Yes. When we take down the walls of separation, we allow other people to be just who they are. It gives us permission to accept all the parts of ourselves as well. And that allows us to not just be human doings, but human beings.
Yeah.
Accept ourselves at every season and stage of life, wherever life finds us, and allows us to accept the same with those around us. And I just think in general, what a much better world to live in, where people approach one another with curiosity and compassion versus with, you know, judgment and criticism.
And humility. And actually, I think this is the key that actually makes you more confident, in a healthy confidence, because you are aware of all the parts of you and you're accepting of all the parts of you and understanding of them. And so you can give that to others. And I just feel like those are the type of people you want to be around. Yeah. You know how that feels when you're around someone where it's just like, oh, like they are just like, authentic.
Yeah.
They are just fully themselves. They are accepting of all the parts of them that make them who they are. And that shows, you know.
Absolutely.
And because of that, they can, in a transference kind of way, offer that authenticity of others, and you feel safe to be yourself in their presence because they are. And I think that's really cool. So those are the takeaways.
I think the one thing that I would really encourage people listening right now to do when they go, you know, as you go throughout your life, is to be able to just be aware of what comes up for you when you are interacting with people and within contexts that make you feel uncomfortable. Sit in that a little bit more. Try to understand it without running away and see if you can open up a perspective that allows you to see people as human.
As human, and, you know, just try to consciously make sure we're operating from a place of genuine love and not of superiority, because people feel that. They do. So this was a loaded conversation, but we are landing this plane. So thank you guys so much for sticking with us through all of this. And we want to hear your thoughts and whatnot. So be sure to follow us on Instagram. And we have a broadcast channel now as well, where we're continuing updates in the conversation.
Yep. And keep in touch.
Until next time.
Hey, if you enjoyed today's episode, let's continue the conversation and stay connected on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube, all linked in the show notes below. Let us know your thoughts or leave a review on the podcast. Your feedback really does mean so much to us. Until next time.